This is the Unstoppable Authors podcast with world-building warrior Angeline Trevina,
planning and productivity powerhouse Holly Line,
and formatting fireball Julia Scott.
Every week we bring you discussions on the craft of writing,
author life and business,
and interviews with some of the industry's most unstoppable authors.
A writer's life doesn't have to be solitary. We're here to bust that myth, support you on your journey, and encourage you to be unstoppable.
Welcome to episode 182 of the Unstoppable Authors podcast. This week, I'm going to talk all about writing folk horror. First, a personal update. Obviously, not a lot has happened since just last week's episode. I've still been working furiously on my worldbuilding guide, which was already at sort of like 50-50 as to whether I'd manage to finish it by the end of March or not. But that's a definite no. I managed to pick up a nasty stomach bug and spent an entire day in bed just watching comfort movies while drifting in and out of sleep. Now, I really don't do things like that often. I'm a bit of a workaholic. I work through all of my illness. So it was really hard for me to do. Like, I never do nothing for a whole day. Even when I'm really ill, I always get some work done. But yeah, so it was strange. And I am trying to be good and ease myself back into work gently. But that is not something that comes very naturally to me. But this book is so close to being finished now, and I'm so keen to get it released. soon. A huge thank you to all of our current patrons who support this show. We appreciate all of that support so much. Patrons get early access to episodes, exclusive access to our off-air banter, and the warm, fuzzy feeling of supporting the podcast. If you'd like to join in and also support the show, you can do so for just £3 a month at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors. And our monthly sessions of Sprints and Giggles, an evening where we do writing sprints, answer questions, and have a laugh, are open to all of our listeners. To get the link to join in, just make sure you're subscribed to our newsletter or a member of our Facebook group. So, on to our main topic, folk horror. Now, although folk horror enjoyed a very popular surge in the cinema of the 1960s and 70s, namely with what is known as sort of the trio of folk horror, Witchfinder General from 1968, The Blood on Satan's Claw from 1971, and The Wicker Man from 1973, the recognition of folk horror as a specific subgenre of horror is actually far more recent. So it's still very much in that stage where people are arguing about what exactly constitutes folk horror while they're trying to pin down the actual definition of it. Of course, by its name, it's clear that it is horror that uses folk tales and folklore to create horror. And while much of the discussion about the genre seems to circulate around British folklore, I'd like to see folk horror springing up from other cultures because there's such a rich variety that the world has to offer in the way of folk stories. And folk horror right now, it's enjoying a real resurgence of popularity in fiction. We're seeing so much of that coming back now. We've seen a lot of mainstream novels following witchcraft as its main plot. And that seems to be really popular at the moment. So we're also seeing this resurgence of folk horror come up. And we've been seeing some of that on services like Netflix as well. So folk horror is really coming back into the public eye, and it's really, really enjoying a resurgence of popularity within fiction. So how do you write it? Let's have a look at some of the elements that make for a really good folk horror story. So first up, I want to talk about setting, because in folk horror, setting is so important. So largely, setting is going to be probably like 50% of what will actually make your book fall into the folk horror subgenre. So it has to be an isolated setting. It has to be completely isolated. And some people, like I say, it's still being hashed out what exactly folk horror is. But some people will say it has to be a rural setting, while other people are actually saying, no, as long as it's isolated from the main society, and it's a place that is secret and can be kept secret, then actually, if you want to set folk horror in the basement of a building in the middle of a city, it would still count as folk horror. So that's a debatable one at the moment. So if you really, really want to chase folk horror, I would probably go with a rural setting. But I think we might see some leeway on that. But wherever you choose to set your horror, the setting is so important. And it has to have atmosphere, atmosphere, atmosphere. So after location, 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 it is atmosphere, atmosphere, atmosphere. It has to be creepy. You have to use your location to raise tension, to create this really creepy, foreboding, ominous atmosphere. It's very much like gothic horror in that. So gothic horror is a subgenre that we're much more familiar with, and we understand what makes a gothic horror much more. So if you take all of the things you know about setting in gothic horror and put it into folk horror, you're probably going to be right on that. You're going to be there. You're going to get it. So you have to use the setting to create this foreboding, ominous atmosphere. So make sure you're using all of the senses. You should be doing this anyway in your writing, but it is particularly important in subgenres like this. You need to really bring your reader right deep into the setting. So yeah, as I've said, it has to be an isolated location. So wherever you're setting your folk horror, it has to be isolated. I'll go on to explain why that's so important. But it could be a remote island, it could be a secluded forest, it could be an isolated village somewhere, or even an underground cave. Like I've said, it could possibly be an isolated place in an urban environment. But we'll see whether that gets accepted into the canon of folk horror or not. We will see. The point of it being isolated is it has to be somewhere that is hard to get into. It is difficult to visit there. So if it's a remote island, it's not going to have a bridge to it. It's not going to have like 30 ferries running each day to it. Okay, it's going to be the sort of place where you're going to have to beg somebody and pay them a lot of money to take you over on a boat. Okay, if it's a secluded forest, or, you know, like a clearing in the middle of a secluded forest, it's going to be the sort of place that a lot of people aren't just going to stumble across. It's going to be a place that's difficult to get to, that you would need to know it was there to actually find it. Because if it's difficult to get into, it's also difficult to escape from. Yeah, and that's really important in folk horror. It is hard to escape from. It is essentially a setting where no one will hear you scream. Okay, so no one's going to hear you shouting for help. And that's what's really important. In folk horror, it's really important that it is an isolated setting, because it has to be somewhere that the community that live there can carry out their lives without very much interference from the outside world at all. The setting also needs to have strong links to the past. So often folk horror is set in an older time period. It you know, it might be set in like the 1970s, which is where we first saw that real popularity of folk horror, or it might be set further back than that. But it's often set in an older time period, or it creates a setting that has an older feel, even though it's in contemporary time. So it's somewhere that transportation and communication is more difficult. So there's no GPS there. There's not going to be any mobile signal. Basically, there's no help. If you need help, there is no help to be had. It might feel like your character is stepping back in time. So if you are setting it in a contemporary time period, when your character gets to this isolated place, it will feel like they're going back in time. Okay, so it will have that older feel about it. And even if you are setting it in a contemporary setting and using all the trappings of contemporary life, that location needs to have strong links to the land's previous use and the ghosts that haunt it. So maybe it's a location that sits on ancient ley lines or an ancient burial ground. These sort of things. We see this in horror a lot. But in folk horror, it is really, really important that it has that connection to the past. So maybe it's somewhere that a stone circle used to stand, or maybe it's somewhere that a battle was fought and lots of people died. Whatever it is, it has to have that strong link to the past. There has to be an important, probably paranormal reason why this place is important or was important. And that power, that darkness, that evil is still manifesting itself today. So yeah, that link to the past is really important, even if you're using a very contemporary setting. So the other thing to think about setting is you really need to treat your setting like you treat a character. Okay, it's not just a backdrop. You can't just drop a spooky forest in and just, there we go, it's folk horror. No, no, no. Your setting needs to play an important part in your story. It has to be that it couldn't have happened anywhere else. So maybe when your character attempts to escape the forest, a thick mist descends. And maybe that happens every time they try to get out of the forest. And that's your location playing a part. It's active in the story. It's active in the conspiracy. Maybe when they try to escape the island, a storm rolls in and they can't get off the island. Maybe while they're trying to escape across remote moorland, they somehow keep returning to where they started and they don't even understand how that's happening. So anything like that, make your setting actually play an important part. Make your setting have a role. Make your setting a barrier. Let it create conflict. Let it actually have an impact on the story. It might be that by the end of the story, your character actually ends up becoming part of the setting themselves. So they might end up locked into stone, or they might end up locked into a tree, or they might become a ghost in the mist. And they become part of that story. Like if there was a sequel, they would be there. They would be part of that landscape that plays a role. So that covers setting and how important it is. Let's move on to plot elements. So obviously folk horror uses the occult as its main plot element. So it might be witchcraft, demonology, Satan worship, human sacrifice, etc., etc., anything like that, anything occult. And this is why the isolated setting is so important. Partly it's so that the community that live there can carry out these acts completely unseen, away from the eye of the law or from the authorities. They can just carry on their life and nobody realizes it's happening. UK. One of those places where the odd hiker might go missing. But hikers go missing in remote places all the time. So, you know, they can get away with it. And partly the other reason is so that the community can stay away from the influence of wider society. So they can create a subculture where the things that they do, the very morally ambiguous things that they do, are normal and accepted and justified because they don't have that influence and that impact from wider society. So as society has moved on and changed its idea on morality, this isolated community has retained the past beliefs. And that is why the isolated setting is so important, so that you can put these plot elements in. The plot often centres around a particular happening or celebration, rite or ritual. So this approach of this event can create the inciting incident, and it offers a sense of urgency as the date moves closer. So it might be an equinox, it might be a solstice, it might be a particular anniversary of what happened in that location years before. So it gives you that sense of urgency in the story, which helps to raise the tension. But yeah, absolutely, your community beginning to prepare for this very important ritual can be the inciting incident for their part in the story. And the moment of the ritual, the actual ritual happening, gives your story its climax, with the build-up of tension to that being, will our protagonists end up as a human sacrifice or not? So that's the build-up of tension. Are they going to manage to escape in time, or are they going to end up sacrificed? It also offers up some great world-building opportunities for creating all the mechanics of the ritual itself. Yes, I had to bring in world-building because creating a ritual and everything around that is so much fun. Even if it's a human sacrifice, it's so much fun. You can have great fun with it. Because in folk horror, even though the inspiration might come from real folk practices, folk horror tends to use rituals and magic and religions that have been fabricated by the author. So yay, you get to make it up. It's great fun. So there's all the plot elements that you need for it to be classed as folk horror. So let's talk about characters and tropes. So your main character is going to be the outsider. Right, that's who your main character is going to be. And they are going to be an unwelcome outsider because this is a community that does not welcome outsiders at all. So the character trope you're looking at is going to be the city mouse or fish out of water. Someone who doesn't belong, someone who's very confused by what they've walked into. They might be a journalist sent to investigate a story there, or they might be a detective sent to investigate a disappearance or a suspicious death. Absolutely, they might be just a hiker who's got lost, or somebody whose car has broken down. But remember that you want it to be a difficult place to get to. So it's not an easy place. It's not easy for them to get to. It's not easy for them to escape from. Their interference is not going to be welcome at all. And their morality from the outside world that they bring into this community is going to clash up against the morality in the isolated community. They are going to be shocked and horrified and disgusted by what this community considers perfectly normal behavior. And I'll tell you now, their story is not going to end happily. I'm sorry, there are no happy endings in folk horror. They are either going to end up sacrificed, or they are going to end up converted and become part of the community, converting to their beliefs and practices. So it's not going to be a happy ending for our city mouse, I'm afraid. There is often a love interest for the outsider, though. So they get something good. So this will be someone who acts to seduce them into the community, or at least seduce them into staying long enough to become a sacrifice in the ritual. But beyond that, they also act as somebody who is a distraction to keep the main character from their original goal of investigating what has happened or finding their bearings so that they can find their way home, or to get their car fixed, whatever it is. They will, so this love interest will seduce them into staying and act as a distraction. So it's quite an important role that that love interest plays. There are often children involved. Obviously, it's a community that has been going for several generations, so there are going to be children there. And it gives a great opportunity for you to give a stark contrast between that assumed innocence of youth and the morally corrupt practices of the community. It's a nice jarring effect. Because there's nothing more unsettling and scary than children doing monstrous things. It's a common horror trope. And yeah, it's common in folk horror as well. And it also gives that sense of perpetuation. So of passing the culture and its traditions onto the next generation and bringing them up in that culture, indoctrinating them into it. So it gives this sense that, oh my goodness, this is never going to end. Because even when the adults die, the children in the next generation are going to take up the mantle. So yeah, you'll often find children in folk horror. It also often focuses around provincial or peasant characters, or at least those who are seen to be living like a simple life, a simple stripped back sort of life. Now, this fits in with that often historical feel of the setting. Now, of course, it's kind of tied up in some tricky stereotypes. So I do wonder if we might start to see a slight shift in this, because it plays into the idea of people living rurally being less educated, which is why they cling to these outdated beliefs and practices. So I do wonder if we might see a shift, or, it, you know, we might not, unfortunately, but it is a bit of a tricky stereotype to play with. So if you're writing folk horror, just be aware of the messages that you're putting out there around, if you're using these, that sort of stereotype. So common tropes in folk horror, obviously one of the common tropes is humans are the real monsters. Of course, it is absolutely monstrous what humans do to other humans, particularly in folk horror. That's the whole crux of the plot. You also see tropes like maybe magic, maybe mundane, which is, it might be the things that are happening really are due to supernatural forces, and that the monster really is an otherworldly monster. Or it might be that everything is actually the humans simply wearing a monster's mask. So if you think about Scooby-Doo, yes, seriously, I'm referencing Scooby-Doo here, where they pull off the monster's mask and realize it's a human underneath. That is the maybe magic, maybe mundane trope. And yeah, we see this in folk horror a lot. So it might be that you do actually want a proper monster in there. So maybe the community are worshipping this particular monster or demon or whatever it is and sacrificing humans to it. Or it might be that this is just a story that they're perpetuating through masks and costumes. So it might actually be a human, which again plays into the humans are the real monsters trope. So Those are the extra plot tropes that you can put into your folk horror. So let's talk about the ending. And Yeah, folk horror is not a place to look if you like happy endings. I'm sorry, it's not. Nothing ends up being resolved by the end. We don't end up with a triumphant main character and the villains being either in prison or dead. No, nothing ends up being resolved. The main character, I'm afraid, will either end up dead or they will end up converted into the community or as a prisoner within the community. They are not going to be leaving that place, I'm afraid. The community will continue with their morally corrupt behaviour. There is a sense that this horror will continue over and over, and there you have that with the next generation. So if you've got children there joining in with these things, yeah, it gives that sense that it will just continue happening. The ending of folk horror is going to be very unsettling, with no sense of hope at all. So on that very, very happy note, that pretty much wraps up this episode on writing folk horror. So I would love to know if it's a genre that you would consider writing in. So let me know on social media. And you can also share any book or movie recommendations within that subgenre. And remember that if you want to join us for Sprints and Giggles, then make sure you're subscribed to our newsletter. And to get all of the additional benefits of supporting the show, you can do so over at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors. And don't forget to share the podcast online and tag us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just search for Unstoppable Authors.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Unstoppable Authors podcast. We'll be back next week with more of our tenacity and worldly wisdom.
Don't forget to visit our website to get the show notes and heaps of helpful blog articles at unstoppableauthors.com.
And join our Guild of Unstoppable Authors, and you will not only hear from us every week, but you will also get a free digital copy of my book, 30 Days of Worldbuilding.
If you enjoyed the episode, please remember to subscribe and leave a review.